The Linux 7.3 VRAM story is one that'll matter to anyone running machine learning workloads on consumer or prosumer GPUs, which is a substantial portion of the HN readership. The problem it addresses is what happens when your GPU runs out of video RAM. Prior to these patches, the typical behavior under VRAM pressure was performance degradation that became effectively unusable. You'd see massive latency spikes or outright crashes as the system failed to gracefully manage the memory shortfall. The new patches, described in detail on Pixel Cluster's blog, implement a form of VRAM overcommit. The system can now allocate more VRAM than physically exists by transparently spilling to system RAM, with significantly better handling of which data stays hot in GPU memory versus what gets swapped.
The practical implication is that models that previously required, say, 24 gigabytes of RAM to run at all can now potentially run on 16 gigabyte GPUs with acceptable performance degradation rather than complete failure. For the home lab crowd, for researchers without institutional GPU budgets, and for developers in regions where high-end GPU hardware is expensive or hard to source, this is a meaningful expansion of what's accessible. 200 upvotes and 49 comments suggests the people it affects noticed immediately.
The Rust GPU offload paper from Arxiv connects to the same general problem from a software architecture angle. The authors, and this is a preprint, so treat the specific numbers with appropriate skepticism, describe a framework for writing GPU-accelerated code in Rust that compiles to portable GPU bytecode without requiring CUDA. The portable, safe, and fast framing in the title maps directly to Rust's core value proposition applied to GPU programming. CUDA is NVIDIA-specific, which creates vendor lock-in for anyone doing GPU computing. Alternatives like OpenCL and Vulkan Compute exist, but have ergonomics that most developers find painful. A Rust-native path with safety guarantees is potentially attractive.
The GPU computing lock-in situation is actually a classic antitrust-adjacent story waiting to happen, though we're not there yet. NVIDIA dominance in the data center GPU market and their CUDA software ecosystem's role in maintaining that dominance is exactly the kind of vertical integration that regulators look at carefully. The Rust paper, if it delivers on its portability claims, represents the kind of ecosystem-level counter that could eventually reduce the switching cost that CUDA imposes.
The Fairphone 6 and Postmarket OS story is philosophically connected to the Linux VRAM piece in an interesting way. What the Postmarket OS project achieved, getting the main camera working on a Fairphone 6 running a community-maintained Linux distribution, represents a different kind of resource constraint problem. The camera pipeline on modern smartphones is extraordinarily complex. It's not just capturing pixels, it's running image signal processing, autofocus algorithms, and computational photography pipelines that are typically implemented in proprietary firmware tied to specific Android versions. Getting that working under a community OS requires reverse engineering or upstreaming vendor drivers.
The Fairphone angle matters because Fairphone's business model is explicitly built around repairability and longevity. They publish repair scores, sell replacement parts, and promise software support for longer than typical Android OEM. Postmarket OS extends that longevity promise even further. Theoretically, a Fairphone running Postmarket OS could receive security updates indefinitely as long as the community maintains the port. 221 upvotes suggests the HN community sees this as more than a niche hardware hack. It's a proof of concept for a different relationship between users and their devices.
Which segues naturally into the Repair Cafe piece. This is a global movement. The organization's website counted 129 upvotes that runs free community events where volunteers with repair skills help people fix broken electronics, clothing, furniture, and appliances. The movement started in Amsterdam in 2009 and now has over 2,500 locations worldwide. What's interesting from an HN angle is that the community's enthusiasm for it sits at the intersection of the right to repair movement, environmental sustainability, and a genuine nostalgia for repair skills that have been systematically devalued by the economics of cheap manufacturing.
The economics of the Repair Cafe model are worth noting. It operates on volunteer labor and donation, explicitly rejecting the commercialization of repair. That's a counterpoint to the corporate right to repair framing, which sometimes focuses on allowing third-party commercial repair services. The Repair Cafe model is saying repair should be a community commons, not just a market transaction. That's a more radical position that doesn't get as much coverage.